great first day of being 31.
We're going to have some fun on the podcast today, coming off the pumpkin spice. We're talking more flavors and more famous flavors, and we're going to balance that out, talking about something sweet with drinking something that's not as sweet. We really enjoyed the sort of, hey, let's try this aspect of the episode last week, so Christian brought something for us to taste to start today's episode. And what is it we're drinking?
Well, if you've watched The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, you know this drink well. We are tasting some Campari on the rocks. And Campari is a bitter liqueur from Italy. And Drew has never had Campari before. I've had it a couple times. It's all right for me, but...
Yeah. So I took a sip already. I should have waited until we started recording. But I was not expecting this level of sweater.
It's like you're sucking on the pith of an orange. Mm. And you're keeping that in your mouth for like an hour or so. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting flavor. I think it grows on me a little bit, but bitter is so foreign to most of us that, like, that's the first thing we're going to push away and say, this is bad, this is
right.
Gross.
It's definitely not gross, it's just bitter. So it's a little abrasive, definitely, at the start. But if you can get past that, like, the orangey aspect of it's pretty nice. Let's look at that quick. I'm sure you could do some pretty sweet stuff with this in a cocktail. It'd be really, really nice. Straight, it just is eye-opening. It's a fitting drink for today, though. It's budgeting season, so throw back one of these at the end of the day. It'll bring you back to reality. It's like chewing on fresh pine.
Yeah. Refreshing.
To an extent, it is. In contrast to the bitter bomb that is... What is this?
Campari.
Campari. We're talking about geisha coffee today. Geisha is really sexy in the specialty coffee industry. Every winter, everybody's releasing their box sets of three different geishas, or their special blend of three different geishas, and they're charging $80, $90, $100 for these coffees. And people are paying it. It's just the thing. We've had geisha coffees the last 2 years. We've tried to make them more accessible, but really enjoyed them. One of our baristas, John McGuire, won the Big Central Regional Brewers Cup competition with a geisha from Hacienda La Esmeralda, and that was pretty cool. But what we want to do is really, as we try to do with a lot of things, just shed some light on the geisha, explain kind of where it came from, why is it so popular, how did it get popular, and how is a geisha coffee different from every other coffee? Why should you even care about it? So let's start with origins. Christian, where did the geisha coffee come from?
So geisha grows really well in Central America, primarily in Costa Rica and Panama. And Panama is kind of the place where geisha erupted. But it's not really where it's from. It's a variety that hails back to Ethiopia. Actually, it's thought to have come outside of a town with a similar name called geisha. And you can actually buy coffee from Ethiopia that is that same variety. It doesn't taste quite the same, but it has a little bit of the characteristic of it. It was odd that geisha wasn't cultivated more, and the reason why is it just didn't grow well in a lot of different climates. Like, you tried growing it at lower altitudes, it just didn't taste right, and it had to have this certain kind of arid, dry climate that Panama provided for it, discovered kind of in the late 90s, early 2000s, and boom, you have this amazing, interesting variety that found, like, the perfect location to really... I guess you'd say, like, the perfect terroir. Like, it just mashed with the region, and all of a sudden you get this bouquet of, like, jasmine and floral and tangerine and papaya. And, like, when you actually taste the coffee cherries, the each seed is surrounded by a little layer of fruit, but when you pop it, it tastes like papaya and fresh mango just chewing on it. It's insane and how good that is. And it's just a matter of happenstance that it They happen to plant the right variety at the right spot, and all of a sudden we have this beautiful coffee that cups super high in terms of Q score. Like, most of them score 88, 89, 90 plus. And just the bouquet of flavors that are around in this coffee, completely by accident. Such an amazing coffee, though.
So we've had this coffee that's really been left dormant for quite a while and has been rediscovered in the last 15 years and has really seen its heyday in the last 5 years as specialty coffee has exploded and really brought with it a demand for these super unique high-end coffees. Is there anything that we could really point to and give credit to for the Geisha coffee's booming popularity?
One of the first coffee auctions, and that's kind of what helped push it along, because not only did we have this really amazing coffee, there was a limited amount of it. Word spread, and all of a sudden prices started to get really expensive. It went to the Best of Panama auction, I believe that's what it's called. And as words get out, like, oh man, you got to try this coffee. It's so great, so great. Of course, people are going to start planting more of it. And there is more Geisha available today than just that little bit. But there's a lot of prestige with some of these farms. And some of the only ways you can get these really, out there being high altitude or a remote micro lot or really high scoring lot is to buy it via auction. And most of them are ending up going into Korea or Japan for over $100 a pound, which is a little bit too expensive for us here at Stone Creek. I mean, I would love to have some and I'd love to share it with you guys, but it's really expensive.
Yeah, we don't want to make you pay for it. That farm we talked about, Hacienda La Esmeralda, is run by the Peterson family, and it probably is the most famous farm for producing Geisha coffee. And it's totally earned that sort of reputation, but I watched this coffee get used twice in competition last year. Of course, John used it, as I mentioned, in regionals, and then a guy from Klatch Coffee, I believe, used it at Nationals, Todd Goldsworthy. He placed third. It really is an amazing coffee that you can almost bank is going to score high as long as you don't screw up the brewing. I think Christian and I would both agree it's worth the hype. We can debate about exactly how many much dollars it's worth. Of course, it's super expensive. There's really only enough of it to go around to the most picky coffee connoisseurs. And you can make the allusion in the equation to wine at this point, is that the finest wines, the finest whiskeys, fetch a really high price because there's not much of it, and it only goes to the most picky of connoisseurs in those fields as well. And it's pretty universally accepted that this is some of the finest coffee out there to get. That's verified through the Q grading scale that is about as objective in coffee quality assessment as you can possibly get.
When you're actually cupping this out using the Q form, it just has such a dynamic acidity that it tends to score really well in that category. Fragrance and aroma tend to be off the charts, delicious. And the complexity of the coffee, just the way that the score sheet is built, just kind of lends itself to this coffee scoring high, as long as it's taken care of and not the processing is just really clean on it. That's why you see the Brewer's Cup people using it, because they use a modified Q form, and naturally you're going to use something that gives you a real advantage. We kind of joke that the Brewer's Cup is kind of known locally as the Geisha Cup. As long as you have a Geisha, you're solid. It just scores well, and it would make sense to use it so long as the form is like that.
Yeah, I think it doesn't play as well in the barista sphere because so much is dependent on the execution across the three beverages, whereas Brewer's Cup is just based on the ability to brew and communicate a nuanced cup of coffee, and Geisha does lend itself well to that. So just in terms of the market, I mean, we're seeing Verve, I saw a local roaster, Johnson Brothers, Weeded, Counterculture, so many coffee roasters produce these Geisha coffees in really small batches in the winter around Christmas time, as I mentioned, for really, really high prices. So should you buy it? That's a pretty freaking good question. We underpriced ours, let's be honest. I think we underpriced it. Would you agree?
We made it accessible.
Yes, and that was the goal. But in so doing, though, for what it was, we underpriced the geisha we offered from Hacienda La Esmeralda last year because we wanted to really show Milwaukee how good coffee can be. You're probably not going to see a price like that again, though, for a geisha coffee. It was $40 for a pound. Most of the time when these things get sold, they get sold in, like, 8-ounce increments.
I feel like we're on an infomercial. Act now. Get your geisha. Yeah. Get your geisha.
No, it's done now.
Yeah, it's done.
Should they buy it?
I think you should try geisha once.
At least once.
If you can get it as a pour-over or just a manual drip in a cafe at some point, do that. There's some places where you can buy, like, a quarter of a pound or, like, an eighth of a pound. If you could do that, I suggest try it. If you're a Stone Creek fan, we'll have it out. And we recommend trying it at least once. Just, it's a unique experience that you don't really want to pass up. It might not be for you, and hopefully it won't be, you know, wasted money. It won't be because you have a new experience, and new experiences are always
you're
great.
You're learning.
Never stop learning.
When are we going to have a geisha?
I am going down to Panama in a few weeks, in the beginning of January, to find our next geisha coffee. So I expect to have it probably sometime middle of next year, and it'll be in our new Uber Lab series.
I would really view tasting a geisha to be up there with a really old scotch. So if you're going for a 16-plus-year-old single malt scotch, you're trying to experience the finest thing you possibly can in a particular beverage category. And even though you may not be the person who always has a 16-year-old scotch lying around the house, you got to get the bottle once for your special occasion, the birth of your kid or whatever. It's the same thing with a geisha. Get it for a special occasion. Get it once just to say you did, because it will be worth it. Like, most of the time, if you're getting it, and I would recommend this, it will be worth it if you get it from the right roaster. So get it from a reputable roaster who's been around, who knows what they're doing. Last thing you would want to do is drop $80 on a half pound of geisha and then have it be under roasted or old green coffee. That would not be good eats.
Yeah, and really good coffee can go bad, just like really good wine can go bad, go south. Under roasted geisha tastes like green beans. Old geisha tastes like burlap. You know, it's not good eats there.
Yeah. So funny story about geisha. I was at an event recently where a company was boasting to have nitro cold brew made with geisha from Hacienda La Esmeralda, and it was the worst. Like, it was so thin and watery. The only thing good it had going for it was that it was nitro. So I'm going to bet it was old green coffee and that the brew ratio was not nearly the amount of coffee to water as it should have been. So it was probably over-extracted, underdosed, old green. It was not good. So watch out for that. People might try and sell you on the geisha name, but that doesn't mean they know what they're doing.
I will throw out there, too, that you shouldn't judge this geisha, like, high-end coffee by other quote-unquote high-end coffees you may or may not have had. And I don't want to, like, trounce on anyone out there who loves their Kona, loves their Jamaica Blue Mountain, loves their Kopi Luwak. And those are coffees that you'll end up paying $30, $40 a pound plus for that I honestly haven't had a coffee that's cupped out. And it hasn't been good, hasn't been impressive. I feel like people are overpaying and really getting behind the story and like the uniqueness, quote-unquote, of these coffees. Kona is from Hawaii and has some really interesting soil, and it's one place you can actually go visit fairly easily. You don't need a passport to go there, so, you know, kind of feels special. Jamaica, a lot of people go down to Jamaica, and so you have this assumption that, you know, Jamaica Blue Mountain is the one kind of variety, and it's just this company that's marking up their coffee. Hopefully we won't hear from the Jamaica Blue Mountain Coffee Company.
I dare you, Jamaica Blue Mountain.
And then the Kopi Luwak's out there is coffee that's been digested by the civet and then picked up, washed, processed, and brewed. And I don't like it. I'll just say that I don't like it.
And what's goofy is that there's a whole bunch of iterations of Kopi Luwak. So I've seen, like, cat-extruded Kopi Luwak, elephants. That was a thing that was just last year, kind of a big deal, this dude with his elephants. And the whole thought process behind this coffee is the enzymes in your in a digestive system mellow out the coffee so it's less bitter. And a lot of people are like, yeah, make coffee less bitter. Let's add butter to it. But the only issue with that is coffee's not naturally bitter unless you brew it wrong. So just don't brew your coffee wrong, and then you won't have to poop it out or you won't have to add butter to it. It'll just be great because you brewed it right. Christian's going to read for us an ad that was picked up by Sprudge.
Yeah.
And this is kind of old, but it's just too funny not to read for you right now.
You know, sometimes you look around Craigslist and you can find lots of interesting, crazy things, and this guy from Portland got the big idea, and I don't really know if this is real or not. I didn't read through the entire article, but I just saw this ad, and the ad reads, "I will produce human Kopi Luwak for you for cheap, my shed."
Which shed is just a great word.
Yeah. "I'm a home roaster, and I'm noticing in the newspaper that animal poop coffee is really popular and expensive. I have been growing yellow Bourbon Arabica in my greenhouse for a couple years and finally starting to produce quality cherries. I will personally ingest this cherry and mimic the Kopi Luwak process. I will roast this coffee so that it's ready to brew in time for the holidays.
For the family member who's special to you.
I will be able to harvest only a couple of pounds of the special kind of coffee. Act now before it's too late." And I love that there's like a personal ad within it. "I'm 47, healthy, and guarantee you will like my Kopi Luwak style coffee. Fecal specimens available for inspection upon request." And I like that he's willing to deliver it too.
That's great service. So that's the Geisha coffee, born out of really the heartland, the origin place of coffee itself, Ethiopia. Caught on pretty big here just in the last 5 years, having been discovered for its awesomeness about 15 years ago. And I think the fanfare around it's going to continue. It's marketing a lot. I mean, it's a fantastic coffee for sure, but once you get buzz about something, marketing kind of takes over, propagates its presence to levels that may or may not exceed what you actually get. So definitely worth trying, but be on the lookout. Make sure you get good stuff before you drop buttloads of money on it.
I can't take the word buttloads and just talking about Kopi Luwak here. It's just shaking my head.
Thankfully, Geisha's good without being shot out of a sphincter.
We've reached a new low on this podcast, so we're going to bring it back up next time.
Next time, we're going to actually kind of go on the opposite spectrum of what is generally considered by coffee geeks to be good. But we're going to bring a positive spin to it. This morning, I drank French roast, which is not super usual for me because I like lighter roasted coffee. I like to see what the coffee, quote-unquote, had to offer originally before you manipulate it with a whole bunch of roasting methodology. But dark roast, as bad of a rap as it gets among more snobby coffee people, is core to the market, really. There's a far bigger market for a slightly darker roasted coffee than there is for high-end specialty coffee. And we believe that dark roasting coffee can be done very, very well. I won't get into it too much because we want to totally lay out sort of the upsides of the dark roast. We want to lay out kind of the history of how coffee became so prevalently dark roasted and talk about the upsides to dark roasting coffee. Drinking coffee that's been pooped out of a cat's butthole. We are geeks.
And we're not drinking that coffee.